It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the head of the World Football Federation resigns his post. Sepp Blatter, president of the World Football Federation, FIFA, abruptly resigned his post Tuesday in the midst of an unfolding corruption scandal. Blatter had just been reelected to a fifth term Friday. He's called for an extraordinary Congress of the Football Federation to choose a successor. It's good news to Greg Dyke, chairman of the English Football Association.
FIFA would never get sorted out while he was there. And it is a deeply flawed, possibly corrupt organisation that needs, you know, needs a lot of work. And that wasn't going to happen while he was there. So he's gone. I mean, when I left on Friday night, I was interviewed by quite a lot of people and I said, look, this, he'll never last 4 years. This won't sustain. But even I couldn't have dreamt that he'd be gone by Tuesday.
The 79-year-old FIFA chief took the world by surprise when he announced his decision at a Zurich news conference, since he had repeatedly professed his innocence throughout days of adverse publicity about FIFA executives' corrupt activities and multi-million-dollar bribe-taking. In Burundi, more street protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid for a third term in elections slated for this month, just 3 days ahead of scheduled parliamentary elections. This protester said Mr. Nkurunziza should withdraw his candidacy for the country to have peace. Protesters clashed with police Tuesday who used tear gas. Some witnesses reported hearing gunfire. Protests since late April have left at least 20 dead. Regional leaders have called for a delay of at least 6 weeks in the elections amid the tensions. The country's electoral commission is reportedly considering alternative dates for the votes. This is VOA News. President Obama signed into law a bill ending the government's massive collection of telephone data intended to prevent terrorist attacks. He said the new rules protect both civil liberties and national security. The signing came hours after days of contentious debate with an overwhelming Senate approval of the measure. Under the rules, the telephone companies, not the National Security Agency, will collect and hold the phone call records of American citizens. Federal investigators would then need a court order to examine those records. Former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, who for 2 years fled the U.S. and revealed details of the secret data collection process, said from a location in Russia Tuesday the program was ineffective.
We've had the Boston Marathon bombings, for example, where the United States government knew who these individuals were in advance of the attack. They were already identified and known to the intelligence services. But despite the fact they were watching everybody in the country, they didn't thwart the attack. And the question is why? The answer there is because when you have individuals like me who are ultimately responsible for this going into a desk every morning and trying to search through the world's communications from the previous day, the previous week, the previous month, you realize very quickly that if we collect everything, we understand nothing.
Critics said the program was a government invasion of privacy because of the millions of Americans whose calls were scrutinized but had no connection to terrorism. Hundreds of divers are searching a capsized passenger ship on China's Yangtze River, looking for survivors, many believed to be elderly tourists. The Xinhua News Agency reports only 14 have been rescued, 7 bodies recovered, more than 430 are missing. The vessel overturned late Monday, moments after being caught in a heavy storm. The U.S. Tuesday acknowledged published reports. Senior U.S. officials met in Oman last week with representatives of the Houthi rebel movement in Yemen. The talks involved Assistant Secretary of State Ann Patterson. Marie Harf is a U.S. spokesperson.
We used that meeting to reinforce our view that there can only be a political solution to the conflict in Yemen and that all parties, including the Houthi, should commit to participation in the UN-led political process. And they were really focused on getting the different political constituencies to attend the planned talks in Geneva, again, including the Houthis.
The meetings are the first publicly recognized talks between a U.S. official and Houthis since the rebels seized the Yemeni capital Sana'a and ousted President Abu Mansur Hadi this year. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir, wanted on genocide charges by the International Criminal Court, was sworn in Tuesday for another 5-year term. Mr. Bashir pledged an era of national unity, stability, ratifying a lasting constitution, promises to fight corruption, improve the economy, and bring relations with the West back to what he called their natural state. He repeated his offer of total amnesty to any armed rebel who joined the talks. Mr. Bashir has ruled Sudan for 25 years. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 3rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Africans said Sepp Blatter's resignation gives additional support to the ongoing demand for term limit in Africa.
Sepp Blatter was a very powerful man. If Sepp Blatter can fall, I don't think that Pierre Nkurunziza will not fall, let alone Paul Biya or Joseph Kabila or whoever else around Africa.
Franklin Bayon is editor of This Is Sports newspaper in Cameroon. Burundians took to the streets again Tuesday against President Pierre Nkurunziza. South Sudan explains why it expels a UN humanitarian coordinator, and Nigeria's president makes his first official foreign trip today, Wednesday.
This is a commitment he has given in the course of the campaign to say that under him there will be a very strong engagement with the neighbors in order that they bring them to the table and take a common position against the terrorists that have been causing so much havoc in the sub-region.
Shehu Garba is senior special assistant on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Former militants in Nigeria's Niger Delta threaten resumption of unrest if President Buhari ends their amnesty program. And the retrial of three convicted Al Jazeera journalists resumes this week in Egypt. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some Africans say the surprised resignation of longtime FIFA president Sepp Blatter should give additional support to the ongoing demand in some African countries for term limit, whether in politics or in sports. The 79-year-old Blatter abruptly resigned Tuesday in the midst of an unfolding corruption scandal. He had just been re-elected 4 days earlier to a fifth term. Franklin Bayon, editor of This Is Sports newspaper in Cameroon, says if Blatter can fall from grace, the likes of President Nkurunziza of Burundi, Paul Biya of Cameroon, and other long-serving African leaders should take note.
You know, this is not an action of goodwill. He's doing this under pressure. If you know that last year the British press reported scandals surrounding the award of a bidding of the hosting rights to Qatar for 2022 and FIFA tried to wait it off, if you know that ahead of only days before the election last week, FIFA was under heavy censure and that he tried to survive that. For him to have resigned after that election, it means he's under heavy pressure. He's under a lot of self-introspection. He knows his honor is at stake. So this is no charity action. It's a serious thing on the person of Sepp Blatter. It's a serious question mark on FIFA.
What happens now? Because it was under Sepp Blatter's watch that World Cup in Qatar was awarded. And there are speculations that perhaps there was some corruption that took place. So what do you think? Do you think Qatar should still host?
Beginning with South Africa, Danny Jordan has come out to say that he noticed that that amount of money, $10 million, was deducted from South Africa's account with FIFA, but that it wasn't paid for as corruption money. Whatever the case, if he admits that that amount of money was deducted, it's not some kind of tacit recognition that there was some form of corruption, even though he wouldn't say so. So if there was corruption over South Africa, which we would prefer to say we want to overlook it because we are happy that the World Cup came to Africa, there was surely corruption with Qatar. I think that the Arab world was happy about that too, but then what the world is happy about, what people are happy about, are not the same thing as what is right. In any case, there will be serious questions over the winning of the World Cup rights by Qatar under Sepp Blatter.
Franklin, all over Africa, we hear people talk now these days about presidential term limit in Burundi. There are weeks of protest against President Pierre Nkurunziza. What lessons do you think the Sepp Blatter resignation can be drawn about what is happening in Africa in general?
Call diminishing returns. You can't be at your best all the time. There's a point when you can't do too well, even though you want to stay long. So I think that for someone who's been in office for over four terms at FIFA, this fall should be a lesson for leaders in Africa, that even when you seem to be very powerful, because Sepp Blatter was a very powerful man, if Sepp Blatter can fall, I don't think that Pierre Nkurunziza will not fall, let alone Paul Biya or Joseph Kabila or whoever else around Africa.
While we have Sepp Blatter for FIFA, we have Ayatu for the Confederation of African Football. He has also been in power for so long. Is there a lesson for him?
You You know that at the last assembly of the Confederation of African Football, having reached the threshold age when he couldn't run for another term in office, he found a way of removing that age limit so that he could go on and on and on as a leader of African football. I think that's a shameful thing for anybody to do. He's been there since 1988. He was there 10 years before Sepp Blatter became president of FIFA. So I think he's been there for too long. He's a Cameroonian. We love him. We are proud to have our brother at the head of African football and at that high level of FIFA. But I think he's been there for too long.
Franklin Bayon is editor of This Is Sports newspaper in Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari embarks on his first official foreign visit to Niger today, Wednesday, and to Chad on Thursday, tomorrow. The two countries are in a joint military offensive against the Nigerian militant group Boko Haram. Today's visit comes a day after Boko Haram militants again attacked the city of Maiduguri, which is slated to be the new base of government operations against the militant group. Shehu Garba is senior of special assistant to President Buhari on media and publicity. He says today's visit is in fulfillment of a campaign promise to have a strong engagement with Nigeria's neighbors and form a united front against Boko Haram.
This is a commitment he has given in the course of the campaign to say that under him there will be a very strong engagement with the neighbors in order that they bring them to the table and take a common position against the terrorists that have been causing so much havoc in the sub-region.
In the heat of the campaign, candidate Buhari was quoted as saying that foreign troops on Nigerian soil is a national disgrace. Does he still stand by this, or is he going into Niger and Chad with something new?
Let me say that, you know, that he served in the army, as you know, rose to the rank of a full general and had served as head of state. He knew the type of army that he left behind. His disappointment is not so much that we had the people from neighboring countries coming to assist. No. Disappointment is in the fact that this is an army that has established its reputation globally, from the Second World War to all of the regional conflicts on the continent and other parts of the world. Here is an army that has caused stability in Liberia, in Sierra Leone, in several other countries. That's where his disappointment comes from.
Chad and Niger have complained of lack of cooperation from Nigeria. This kind of strained the relation between these two countries and their armies as they are trying to fight Boko Haram. Would Nigeria, under President Buhari, promote a more cooperative engagement with these countries?
In fact, you are going to hear more of that from his speech tomorrow to Niger and the Chad the day after. Certainly, this is the basis upon which this
I read a survey where they talk about the challenges confronting President Buhari, among them being unemployment, also the frequent power outages that Nigeria experiences. Is the president ready to take on these challenges?
Absolutely. We are talking about the plan upon which he campaigned. The issue of security, job creation, you know, which is tied to the overall recovery of the economy, and of course, the war against corruption. These are the major plans on which campaign, and you are going to be able to see action along these lines.
I know you said you have not probably seen this new video by Boko Haram, but also there was a Boko Haram attack. People would say President Buhari has inherited Boko Haram, and now it's up to him to do something about it, something that during the campaign you criticized President Jonathan for.
2 days in office has been devoted to no other thing than the issue of security. And you know that he has charged the military high command to relocate the command headquarters of the war against terrorism to Maiduguri, that is the Borno State, which is the theater of all of this.
Shehu Garba is senior special assistant to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Former militants in Nigeria's Niger Delta region say they may resume their unrest if the country's new president ends the amnesty program and monthly payments that brought peace to the oil-producing region. Chris Stein reports.
Each month, former militants who used to spend their time bombing pipelines and kidnapping foreign oil workers in the Niger Delta get the equivalent of about $330 to convince them to occupy their time in other ways. They also get access to training programs intended to help them find work. This arrangement started in 2009, but it was never supposed to last forever. New Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said so in his inauguration speech last week, announcing the program would end in December. He added that the government would, in his words, invest heavily in the projects and programs currently in place. A spokesman for Mr. Buhari declined to comment further on the president's remarks. Before his election last March, there were widespread fears that Mr. Buhari would allow the amnesty to end rather than extending it, as many militants hoped former President Goodluck Jonathan would do had he won the election. Reuben Wilson, a former militant and chairman of a group of ex-militant leaders, says it would be unwise for Mr. Buhari to let the amnesty lapse.
It would be dangerous for Mr. President to say he's going to end amnesty program. It would be very, very dangerous because this is something that is taking care of 30,000 people in the Niger Delta.
Prior to the election, some former militants threatened violence if Mr. Buhari won office. Much of that rhetoric has subsided since the polls, and some militants even came out publicly to say they would give Mr. Buhari a chance. Niger Delta activist Ankio Briggs says what Mr. Buhari does in the coming months will determine how the ex-militants react to the amnesty ending. But she says little has changed in the Delta since the amnesty started in 2009.
There is the issue of environmental devastation. There is the issue of unemployment. There is the issue of so much injustice in the Niger Delta. None of those things have been touched as far as the Niger Delta people are concerned.
During the height of the Niger Delta insurgency, militant attacks cut Nigeria's oil production by about a third. Cutting off amnesty payments to the approximately 30,000 men involved in the program risks restarting the crisis, Wilson said.
If he ends, there will be too much crisis in the Niger Delta. Most of the people you see outside, you know, most of them you're seeing at the road moving, you know, that they sustain through this amnesty salary will likely go back to the creek. And when they go, it won't bring good results to Nigeria.
Nigeria cannot afford any further disruption of its oil industry. Last year's global fall in crude prices ravaged Nigeria's budget. The country has few other options for money. 90% of government revenue comes from the oil industry. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
Today's Wednesday, June 3rd. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Protesters took to the streets again Tuesday in Burundi's capital against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term. Emily Yap reports from Bujumbura.
Scenes of unrest resume on Tuesday morning in Burundi's capital city, Bujumbura. Police use tear gas and live bullets to disband groups of protesters in several neighborhoods of the city. The protesters oppose President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term in office. As soon as the clashes erupted, bystanders and street vendors quickly ran to find shelter behind gate doors, observing the scene from a distance. Still, some got tear gas canisters thrown in their backyard, among them Eric. He said the police has decided to attack the population. He said they threw these tear gas in his yard, where there are mamas and papas and children. In another neighborhood, tensions were also high. A car from the Red Cross made its way between the police and the protesters and took away several injured people who said they were hit by live bullets from the police. Instead of protecting us, he says, the police kill us. The renewed violence comes after East African leaders gathered in Tanzania last weekend to discuss the crisis in Burundi. They urged the government to delay the elections planned this month, but the protesters say that the summit did not address what they asked for, that President Nkurunziza not seek a third term. Critics say a third term would violate a constitutional two-term limit, but supporters say it is allowed because he was elected by parliament, not voters, for his first five-year term in 2005. The spokesperson of the government told journalists on Sunday that the presidency is favorable to postponing the election, but has yet to make an official statement and give new dates. Parliamentary elections were originally meant to take place this Friday, and the presidential election 3 weeks later. Emily Yap for VOA News in Bujumbura.
A spokesman for South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has been explaining the reasons for the expulsion of UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Sudan, Toby Lancer. As Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the government said Lanso was expelled because of a statement he made about the country's economy.
President Kiir's spokesman Atenywek Ateny says the decision to expel Lanza was passed by the Council of Ministers at a meeting chaired by President Kiir. He says the government decided to expel Lanza is because
the mandate of United Nations in South Sudan is to supplement the government of Republic of South Sudan, to support the government of South Sudan, is not to cause havoc. And Toby Lanza's statement was not giving hope to people of South Sudan, given that he was predicting the collapse, the total collapse.
Ateny says Lanza made his comments about South Sudan's collapsing economy in Geneva last month. At the time, fighting was escalating in Unity and Upper Nile states, where all of South Sudan's oil is produced. Ateny says whether or not the government will consider the UN Secretary General's call for the expulsion order to be revoked.
That's now the matter for the president. So this was a Council of Ministers decision, and the president has a prerogative to overturn it. He has not yet overturned it, but it's not impossible.
Lanza is not the first to warn that South Sudan's economy is teetering on the edge of collapse. Last month, opposition leader Lam Akol warned that runaway inflation was pushing the country's economy to the brink of disaster. Since the conflict broke out in December 2013, Lanza has been an outspoken advocate for peace and has traveled throughout South Sudan to see firsthand the impact of the conflict on the people's lives. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
After months of delays, the retrial of three convicted Al Jazeera journalists and five others continues this week, with defense lawyers expected to begin final arguments tomorrow, Thursday. The trial and the sudden release of an imprisoned Egyptian-American activist raises questions about Egyptian justice being less harsh to foreigners than its own citizens. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from Cairo.
The three Al Jazeera English journalists, Peter Gresta, Mohamed Fahmy, and Bahar Mohamed, along with five other co-defendants, are being retried as planned, despite the fact that Gresta is in Australia after being deported early this year. Other defendants include students accused of filing media reports about Egypt for Al Jazeera's Arabic language station, now banned in Egypt. The Egyptian government says the network supports the Muslim Brotherhood, which it calls a terrorist organization. The charges include things like spreading lies and helping a terrorist organization. A lawyer who represents three of the students, Shaban Saeed, said the two groups of defendants did not know each other before their arrests. The lawyers for all the defendants are working together, he says, but he fears the journalists may be treated better because they are known internationally. Saeed does not deny Al Jazeera's Arabic programming criticized the government, but he argues the opposition should be allowed a voice. The network says there is no bias whatsoever. Rights groups condemned the original trial, saying no credible evidence was presented before the journalists were sentenced to 7 and 10 years last June. But Egyptian publisher and editor Hisham Qasim says in Egypt the trial was not seen as an effort to silence journalism in general, but part of a specific fight between the Egyptian government and Qatar, which supports the Muslim Brotherhood and owns Al Jazeera.
The Jazeera case was basically perceived by everybody as a mud fight between the Egyptian and Qatari governments. So nobody was looking upon it as something to gauge the situation by. We all knew that this was basically the Egyptian government sick and tired with Jazeera.
Relations have since improved between the two nations, and Qasim says he believes the current trial will be fair. But if the convictions are upheld, he adds, a recent presidential decree saying foreign convicts can be deported could undermine the government's credibility. After Gresta was deported under the decree, Mohamed Fahmy renounced his Egyptian citizenship, hoping to be deported to Canada, his other home country. Last weekend, Mohamed Sultan, an Egyptian-American activist who had been sentenced to life in prison, gave up his Egyptian citizenship and was suddenly sent to the United States. Activists who celebrated Sultan's release also complained he was freed only because he is a U.S. citizen. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Marco Woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we focus on football. Embattled FIFA president Joseph Sepp Blatter says he'll step down from office. This comes amid a barrage of allegations of corruption and scandal that is ravaging FIFA's image. In his statement released at the FIFA headquarters in Zurich, Switzerland on Tuesday, Blatter, who was re-elected to a fifth term in office 5 days ago, correctly points out that he has the mandate from FIFA membership to lead. However, Blatter concedes that he does not have the mandate of the entire world of football, namely the fans, players, clubs, and all those whose lives are intimately and passionately linked to football. According to his statement, Blatter says he'll step down at an extraordinary elective FIFA Congress. The next ordinary FIFA Congress is due in the Mexican capital, Mexico City, on the 13th of May 2016. Blatter urges the FIFA Executive Committee to call an extraordinary Congress to elect his successor earlier than the Congress in May next year. He says the extraordinary FIFA elective Congress should be in keeping with the FIFA statutes and allowing candidates to present themselves and campaign. FIFA's independent chairman for Audit and Compliance Committee, Domenico Scala, will oversee the electoral process. Staying in Zurich, Blatter says that until he steps down from office, he will focus his energy on effecting far-reaching and unprecedented reforms. These include, among other things, deep-rooted structural changes, reducing the size of the FIFA Executive Committee, introducing term limits for and integrity checks on FIFA Executive Committee members. On a more footballing note, Ghana bounced back with a 3-2 triumph over Argentina at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Wellington, New Zealand on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, tournament debutants Senegal seek to get their campaign back on track when they face Colombia in a must-win encounter in Hamilton. Senegal lost their opening match 3-0 to Portugal, while Mali plays Serbia in Dundee. Should Mali win, they'll be the first Africans to qualify for the knockout phase of the tournament, having beaten Mexico 2-0 in their opening encounter. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, June 3rd.
In any take, it's Joseph, Orumba OG, a number of people. Then they use this year group, Daybreak Africa, to say congratulations to His Excellency, President Muhammadu Buhari, on the occasion of his investiture last week, Friday. Currently, the General Secretary to mark the peace for the purpose from our side. I have our pledge to help his aviation interests using our personal experience. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of news. Sepp Blatter, president of the World Football Soccer Federation, FIFA, abruptly resigned Tuesday in the midst of an unfolding corruption scandal. Blatter had been re-elected to a fifth term as president just 4 days earlier. That's it for this Wednesday, June 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.